So I want to talk about the symbolism of Padmasambhava, really. So I've already said that he is a historical figure, but he's also a mythic figure. And we have to understand him in both of these ways. And there's this wonderful, crazy book called The Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava. And when you read it, you really have to leave your rational mind at the door, because it takes you into this magical realm. So you can't believe any of it. It's just very imaginative. It's just very mythic. And it's just good fun. So we have to understand it more like that. It's dramatic. So we start off with Padmasambhava being born on a lotus. So that's his name, in the northwest land of Udayana, somewhere in northwestern India. And he just magically materializes on this lake, emanated by Amitabha through some mysterious means. So Amitabha is the Buddha of compassion. So there he is on the lake. Anyway, he gets discovered by this local king, who takes him back to the court and adopts him. And he grows up as a prince in the court and has all sorts of experiences. But then, at a critical age, he renounces the kingdom and sets off, as many adventurers have done before him, sets off into the jungle and visits various cremation grounds. So this is what they did in Tantric India. The Tantric yogis really loved cremation grounds. So why do you think that they loved cremation grounds? What's so good about cremation grounds? So there's all sorts of dead and decomposing bodies. And there's a certain sort of buzz or vibration in the air that's quite mysterious. And there's ghouls and monsters and spirits and half-eaten corpses and jackals howling in the night. So Padmasambhava was a frequenter of cremation grounds, and he'd sit with his back against the stupa and he'd practice tantric meditation. And he'd meet the Darkinis. So the Darkinis are these female goddesses, and they have fangs, and they're flesh-eating, and they're really quite terrifying. They can be very frightening, so watch out for the Darkinis. But they can also be quite inspirational as well. So they're quite ambivalent kind of figures. So here we are, Padmasambhava is in the cremation ground. So Volume 1 of For Life and Liberation, it describes his exploits in these different cremation grounds. And he meets all sorts of ghouls and all sorts of monsters. So what does it all mean? Well, I don't know. Who can say, really? I'm not at all learned in these matters. And then, of course, Volume 2 is the more historical Padmasambhava. So I've already said he gets invited to go to the court of King Trisandetsan in Lhasa, and together with Shantarakshita, he builds a monastery and establishes a whole tradition. So that's, in a way, that's the whole kind of crazy mythic context of Padmasambhava, and also the history. And he's this extraordinary kind of combination of both of these together, really. And you can't really separate the history and think, well, let me discover the real Padmasambhava, because actually the whole myth sort of takes us further into who the real Padmasambhava is. And also, well, we can't separate the myth from history because it's actually historical fact that he did exist. You know, there's documentary evidence that he did actually walk from Kathmandu and arrive in Lhasa, and they did actually write history. The Tibetans were very good at history, so it is known a lot about what was happening in most times. So there's both mythology and also the history. And these are woven quite finely, and we can't really distinguish for one from the other. In a way, we just have to go with it. So I wish we had a bigger, more colourful picture of Padmasambhava. So we've got this rupa, whatever it's made of, but we haven't got any colours there. So I did bring this small picture of Padmasambhava, but unfortunately, from probably where you are, you can't see it at all. It's all rather small. But anyway, I'm going to be describing what Padmasambhava looks like and the symbols of Padmasambhava. So that we can begin to understand him as a figure. So the main colour associated with Padmasambhava is red. He really does redness. So if you think of a colour red, a bright kind of fire engine postbox kind of red, then that's a jolly good start. Red is the colour of love, it's the colour of passion, it's the colour of feeling. So just imagine redness, and that takes us into his qualities. So Padmasambhava embodies love, he embodies compassion, he embodies feeling. And we find him seated on a red lotus. So that's how these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas like to sit, for some extraordinary reason. They sit on lotuses. I don't know why. But that's how they're depicted in the Indian tradition. They sit on these rather colourful lotuses. And of course, Padmasambhava sits on a red one, on a white moon disc. So there's a moon up in the sky, but he's sitting on a moon mat on a lotus. And well, that's just how it is, really. So this is the tradition that we've inherited. So he's sitting on a lotus. Well, the lotus is a symbol of spiritual unfoldment. And he's quite often sitting in this position of relaxed. So he's relaxed. He's kind of stepping down. He's not in full lotus, like the Buddha, in some very kind of ascetic sort of meditation pose like this. It's as if he's already quite relaxed, quite playful in a way, really. So there's something quite playful about Padmasambhava. And he's sitting in this relaxed position because he's not making a big effort to attain enlightenment, because he's already enlightened. It all happened quite easily. Somewhere in the cremation grounds, he attained enlightenment, and since then it's all play, and he's just taking it easy in a rather comfortable and kind of playful way. And he wears these three robes, so his robes are quite important, and the robes symbolize his connection with the three traditions that I've talked about. So he's wearing this lower robe, this yellow lower robe, which relates to the Hinayana, the practitioners of the Buddha's original teaching. Quite an ascetic approach. But then he's wearing a red cloak. It's wonderful flowing cloak which envelops him. And of course that symbolises the Mahayana tradition of love and compassion. And that really gives him this quality of redness. But then he's wearing this blue Vajrayana shirt. So blue is the colour of the Vajrayana. So he's wearing all of these three robes and embodying these three approaches. So he's a monk, he does asceticism, he's a scholar, and he's a meditation teacher. But more than that, In a way, he embodies the three yanas, but he also embodies different lifestyles as well. So he has this white shirt. I mean, he's wearing quite a lot of clothes, actually. But in Tibet, it was okay because it was pretty chilly. But a bit hot in India, I thought. But he has a white shirt, so that symbolises the sort of layman, really. So the lay person. He does that, and of course he does the whole monastic thing. He's an ordained monk, but he's also got this very long black hair. So he has the long black hair, flowing hair as the yogin. So in a way, it's quite outrageous, but because he is a monk with long hair, and of course you never see monks with long hair. Buddhist monks just don't have long hair, but of course Padmasambhava does. So he's quite a sort of multiple figure, really, that is inclusive of just about everything, really. So he embodies the three traditions, he embodies his different lifestyles. So whether you're a lay person, whether you're ordained, whether you're a scholar or a meditator, Padmasambhava embodies it. And so he's got the three robes, but he's also got this scholar's hat. So that the hat was the kind of hat, it's a red hat, the kind of hat that what are called the panditas wear. So the pandita is the scholar. But outrageously enough, he's got the flaps turned up. So the hat should be pulled down. I mean, that's how the scholars wear it. But in fact, he's got his hat, his brim, sort of rather jauntily, sort of turned up, really. So you'll probably be beginning to recognise that he's a rather unconventional figure, Padmasambhava. He's rather unconventional. And he's got this half vajra on top of his head, and he's got this vulture's feather. So why do you think he wears a vulture's feather in the on the top of his scholar's hat? You probably don't know at all, do you? You just can't imagine. Well, the vulture flies very high. Apparently it's the bird that flies the highest. It soars through the sky. So it symbolises his high view. So he has this incredibly high view. So Padmasambhava says that in terms of the Dharma, my view is the highest, the most elevated. But in terms of my ethical practice is the finest. It's the most particular. So he embodies ethics, he embodies meditation, and he embodies the view. So quite a lot of different aspects. And at the front, you should see, well, you probably can't see really, but let me tell you, there's also a sun and moon there. Can you see a moon disc like that with the sun up above? So that refers to the yogic channels, the lunar and the solar channels. So he's integrated the energies of the solar and lunar energies. So that's more in terms of deep meditation. So he's a monk, but he's also a bodhisattva as well. You get an impression he does everything, doesn't he? So Padmasambhava does everything. So he's also got jewels as well. So you know the bodhisattvas wear silks and jewels. That's what they like. Well, Padmasambhava does that too. So he's got some rather nice bracelets on, and he's got these big golden earrings. So that means he's a tantrika. He's a bodhisattva, he's a monk, he's a scholar, he's a yogin. He does it all, really. So that's what he's wearing. And he's got these shoes on as well. I don't know what to say about them. But what I would like to say is that he's holding a vajra. So in his right hand, he holds the vajra. So what does the vajra represent? What does it symbolise?
Determination.
Determination, yeah.
Cutting through,
yeah.
Energy,
yeah.
Protection.
Yeah.
Compassion.
Yeah. Yeah, again, quite a lot of different things. So a Vajra particularly is a stylized thunderbolt. So Zeus was king of the gods, and Zeus holds a thunderbolt. So the Vajra is like a thunderbolt. So it's a symbol of power. I mean, a thunderbolt is supremely powerful. And the Vajra has these two ends. So it's about transformation. So it's about the transformation of the five poisons into the five wisdoms. So he symbolizes the power, the capacity to be able to symbolize the deepest poisons of our mind or soul into the deepest and profoundest wisdom. And he's just holding that in this rather extraordinary mudra. And the mudra is called the demon-defying mudra. So, demons, watch out. He's holding the thunderbolt, and clearly he's not fussed with the demons, because he's Padmasambhava, and he's got this spiritual power. And then in his left hand, he's holding, I mean, you can't really see it there at all, but he's holding this vase of immortality. And the vase of immortality is within a skull cup. So what do you think the skull cup symbolizes? I mean, just think about that. He's holding a human skull cup.
Impermanence,
yes. Death, impermanence. Quite an extraordinary... So that's very much a tantric symbol. They like bones, the tantrics, and skull cups and that kind of thing. So he's holding a skull cup, and the skull cup is brimming with nectar. What does the nectar symbolise?
Wisdom?
Yeah.
Enlightenment?
Which?
Enlightenment?
Yeah.
Immortality.
Mortality.
Immortality.
Yeah.
Life force.
Yeah, well, perhaps all of those things, really. I mean, the thing about a symbol is that we can't kind of pin it down to anything in particular. So when we think about these symbols, like the Vajra or the skull cup, we can't just say, oh, it represents this. Actually, they're just these multiple associations, and we can have all sorts of associations with the skull cup. So it's filled with nectar. And then there's this vase of immortality. So what does that symbolise? Padmasambhava has attained this long life. He's immortal. He's undying. And that's a symbolism for awakening. That's a symbolism for enlightenment. So there's inside the long life vase, there's this long life nectar. And Padmasambhava, somebody comes up, and he pours the long life nectar on top of their head. So that's initiatory. So Padmasambhava initiates us into long life. Long life is a secret. It's both about our ordinary health and vitality, but it's also about the undying as well, the attainment of enlightenment. So it's both of those things. We need a good long life, if possible, to attain awakening. It certainly helps, anyway. So it's both about good health and long life, but also immortality. So he's just holding this in a rather nonchalant kind of way. He's holding the Vajra. So they both complement each other in a rather delightful kind of way. And sometimes on the vase of immortality, there's a jewel. What do you think the jewel symbolizes?
Transformation,
yeah.
Dharma,
yeah.
Wealth,
Yeah. Any more?
Is it the wish fulfilling?
Yes, that's it. Yes, it's for wish fulfilling jewel. You've got it right. Yes, yes. Yeah. So the jewel symbolizes everything you could possibly want. Particularly, of course, in the Mahayana. Well, it's awakening, it's enlightenment, it's bodhicitta. So it's an extraordinary kind of composite symbol that he's holding. He's just kind of nonchalantly holding the skull cup, brimming with nectar, with this vase of immortality. And then on top of the vase of immortality is this shining, scintillating jewel of awakening and bodhicitta. So there's quite a lot there. And on his left side, he's cradling this thing called a katvanga. So a katvanga is a trident. And on the trident, there are three heads. One is freshly severed. one is decomposing and rotting, and there's kind of gore sliding down the trident, and the other is a skull. And well, what do you think these symbolize then? Why would he have these three heads on the end of his trident? And what does his trident symbolize anyway? Don't know. Yeah, it's a staff, isn't it? Yeah, it's a staff, yeah. And the old bhikkhus used to have these staffs.
Are the heads overcoming demons?
Yes, it's always that sort of thing with Padmasambhava, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. You think of demons, Padmasambhava, yeah, that's just what he does. He overcomes demons, doesn't he? So, particularly, he overcomes the poisons. So, greed, hatred, and delusion. So, often the three skulls, the three heads can be symbolized by greed, hatred, and delusion. So, they're three poisons. So he's conquered, so he's speared them. And he's walking around with these. I've speared the most fundamental human poisons that you can, the deepest, nastiest poisons, and I've speared them. I'm holding them on my trident for everybody to see. This is what's possible. This is what we can all do. So it's quite a thing, really. And dangling from his trident, there's also a vase of initiation. So Padmasambhava is a tantric guru. He initiates you into profound, deep meditation. He's a guru. He embodies the Vajrayana tradition. What else is there on his... Well, there's a double Vajra as well on his trident. There's actually lots of things. And there's also some streamers. So there's streamers, there's a double Vajra, there's a vase of immortality. Sometimes there's a bell and damaru. So this is his tantric gear. So he's got his staff, and the staff holds his accoutrements. What every tantric yogin needs, of course, is a bell, a vajra, a damaru. The damaru is for rattling. It's for invocation. It's an invocation. And the face of Padmasambhava. So there's quite a lot one can say about the face. So often in the pictures, he's got this kind of deep frown. His brows are knitted. And there's this sense of this tremendous sort of determination. He's a no-nonsense guru that doesn't put up with any kind of nonsense. So he's got this frown of determination, but on the other hand, he's got this rather nice sort of compassionate smile. So the smile is soft and gentle, but the brow is furrowed. So it's actually quite difficult to do at the same time. So the face is often called, it's a kind of wrathful smile. So it's got these two kind of contrasting aspects. So he's actually friendly, he's kind, he's compassionate, he's paying attention to you, he's kind to you. But on the other hand, there's this definite sense of clarity and discernment and determination there with the furrowed brow. And not only that, he's got these kind of big, kind of penetrating eyes, and he's looking right at you to the very core of who you are as a person. And he's really looking at you and seeing you, seeing how you are. And that's awesome when somebody does that. When somebody really sees you, that's really awesome. And he's really looking at you and seeing you with this tremendous compassion, with this tremendous love. And he's just opening his eyes to how things are. He's just looking at how things are. He's seeing how things are. And, well, this is reality here and now. It's not as if there's somewhere else. It's not as if it's somewhere else. It's not as if enlightenment is somewhere else. It's all about just entering fully and deeply into the here and now, being right here and seeing it clearly, allowing the veil to part and just opening up to how things are right here and now. So that's very much what Padmasambhava is about. That's very much what the Vajrayana is about, but entering into how things really are in the here and now. And he has this beautiful red aura, so the whole sense of Padmasambhava is kind of redness. He has this red robe, but his aura is red, and quite often he's surrounded by rainbows. So that's very colourful. Rainbows are really quite magical. And he has this green head aura, so he's a halo, green halo, red aura, lots of rainbows, so very colourful. And of course it's quite ethereal. And Padmasambhava often comes together with this triad of figures. So there's Amitabha, who is the Buddha of infinite light. So he's the Buddha of compassion. And then there's Avalokiteshvara, who embodies this bodhisattva quality of compassion. So he holds this shining, scintillating jewel. He really embodies love and compassion. And then there's Padmasambhava. And Padmasambhava is both a historical figure, but also quite mythical. Whereas Avalokiteshvara is clearly much more mythical. So Avalokiteshvara embodies the Bodhisattva principle of compassion. Amitabha is the Buddha principle of compassion. Padmasambhava is the human embodiment of compassion. So quite often in the tradition, we have these three figures together. Padmasambhava, Avalokiteshvara, and Amitabha. And Padmasambhava is in relationship to Amitabha and Avalokiteshvara. He's embodying the love and compassion that they have. So he's in the lotus family. So what I'd like us to do during the meditation is to imagine Padmasambhava. Just imagine him in the way that I've described, and you can do this as much or as little as you want to. I mean, I've attempted to describe him, and you can just imagine him there in front of you. Perhaps you'll see various colours. Perhaps you'll be interested in various things. You might reflect, well, what does this trident really mean? Or what is it about this skull cup? So allow yourself to be interested in the various symbols and allow the various symbols to speak to you So what do they really mean? We can ask ourselves that. I mean, there's the formal, well, the trident means this, or the skull cup means that. But allow your own imagination to inform you. So we receive our own wisdom. We allow the symbols to speak to ourselves. And we see what the figure means to our own imagination. And we'll recite the Padmasambhava mantra. So it goes, Om Ahum Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum. So he's the Vajra Guru. And of course he's Padma. He's in the lotus family. And he's attained the siddhis. So the siddhis are the miraculous abilities that arise from awakening. So the mantra holds his name. Om Ahum are the three seed syllables, that is forehead, throat and heart. So the Om is here, the white Om, the red R is at his throat, and the blue Hum is at his heart. So Om Ahum Vajra. He's the Vajra. He's holding the Vajra. He's the Guru who embodies awakening. Vajra Guru Padma. He embodies particularly the Padma qualities. Well, there's all sorts of different qualities there. He's attained the siddhis. And the Hum is in his heart. That the Hum symbolizes the transformation. So he's the master of transformation, the transformation of poisons, hindrances into the qualities of awakening. So he's a master of transformation. So we'll recite the mantra, and then just let the figure speak to you. So I might say a few things during meditation or not. It won't be a guided happening or anything too complex. We'll just open up to the figure of Padmasambhava and just let the figure in and see what it says for you. Maybe something, maybe not.